The Winter Olympics open Friday in Salt Lake City, Utah, under the tightest security in the history of the Games. Even before September 11th, security in Salt Lake was a priority, as it has been at every Olympics since 1972. That's when Palestinian terrorists killed 11 members of the Israeli team at the Summer Games in Munich, Germany. The incident ravaged the Olympic ideals of international peace and unity and forever changed the way the Olympics are planned. In this 30th anniversary year of Munich, NPR's Tom Goldman reports on the attack and the legacy.
On the day he should have died, 30 years ago, Israeli Olympic wrestler Gad Zabari was awakened by what he thought was a celebration.
At 4:30 in the morning, there was a small explosion, and we thought that there was a party for someone who got a medal, so we continued to sleep.
20 minutes later, Zabari heard voices outside his room in the Olympic Athletes Village in Munich. He opened the door, and when he saw the Kalashnikov assault rifles, Gad Zabari knew there was no party. Gunshots that had killed two teammates woke him up on September 5th, 1972. And now, a person wearing a hood was forcing him at gunpoint down a flight of stairs. At the bottom, Zabari, a self-described man of action with a hot temper, shoved the rifle aside and bolted into an underground parking lot.
From the start, I decided to run in a zigzag. At the first column, I kept changing directions. They fired 2-3 rounds, one after the other. I continued to run without thinking if I would get injured.
Zigzagging his way to safety, Gad Zabari climbed over a fence and ran into the first house he saw. He spilled out a jumble of words in broken English. Terrorists. Guns. Help.
I heard sirens and police cars all going out towards the Olympic grounds.
ABC television sportscaster Jim McKay, who would become a central figure in the drama, got the early morning phone call telling him, "We're going live in 45 minutes. You're going to anchor the coverage." He reminisced recently on the CNBC program, The Olympic Show.
By the time I got there, Rune and Jeff had wheeled out two cameras. It was a little hillock there, and they got the cameras up on there. And that's what covered that 16-hour day.
The peace of what have been called the Serene Olympics was shattered just before dawn this morning, about 5 o'clock.
This scene in the Olympic Village today became the symbol of man's inhumanity to man as an organization called the Black September Movement, a Palestine guerrilla organization, scaled the fences of the Olympic compound and with machine guns blazing entered the Israeli housing compound, killed two men, and are still holding hostages.
As the world started waking up to the news, so did Israeli track athlete Esther Rote, who was sleeping in the women's quarters just 60 feet from where the attack was taking place. She was told to gather her things and go with her teammates to another building.
I remember I was very afraid, and afraid also to move another building. I think every building have terrorists and waiting for us.
Terrorism was not a new experience for Israelis, but Esther Rote says this was.
Look, before, the world was another world. You don't dream about it can happen in the Olympics.
Simon Reeve, who wrote the book One Day in September, says there were warnings at the time that Arab militants were on the move in Europe. But Israeli security agents only advised the country's Olympians to be on the lookout for suspicious letters or strange items in garbage cans. The German hosts believed their security plan was adequate, especially for what the Germans hoped would be the perfect Olympics. Author Simon Reeve.
The Germans were very keen to dispel any memories of the Nazi period. The games were known as the Games of Peace and Joy, and security staff were dressed in rather fetching blue uniforms and were armed with nothing more than walkie-talkies.
But now, 8 terrorists were in the process of shattering that ideal. They were holed up at 31 Connollystrasse with 9 hostages, among them 26-year-old weightlifter David Berger, an American who'd moved to Israel, and 51-year-old weightlifting judge Yaakov Springer. He fled his native Poland during World War II, but the rest of his family stayed behind and died in the Holocaust. Now, Springer couldn't flee, trapped with 8 countrymen at 31 Connollystrasse. The documentary, One Day in September, recounts how that innocuous building suddenly became the focal point of TV cameras and world attention.
This is a live shot you're looking at right now, and we're moving in now on the windows behind which, at this moment, 8 or 9 terrified living human beings are being held prisoner. The demands have been many. There is someone right now. And this has happened time and time and time again. The door opening, the head coming out to see what is going on.
30 years ago, it was a terrible place.
Standing outside 31 Connollystrasse today, Dr. Hans-Jochen Vogel can remember the most minute details of September 5th. He was there as the vice president of the Olympic Organizing Committee, only a few yards away from the lead terrorist, a man with a white hat and face blackened with shoe polish, who made frequent appearances outside the front door.
He had no very strong movements of his arms, so it could be the imagination he was relaxed. I would say he was quite decisive. He had a very strong idea what he want to do and what he already did.
The present situation is as follows. The 200 prisoners, 200 Egyptians held by the Israelis, have to be liberated according to the demands. If they are freed and the revolutionaries have free and safe departure, then for them this action is terminated.
The demands conveyed by German police weren't even considered by the government of Israel. Prime Minister Golda Meir refused to negotiate with terrorists. That put even more pressure on the undermatched German negotiators. Even though senior politicians were involved, the German government required local authorities to handle the incident. Author Simon Reeve.
Responsibility for resolving the crisis was given to the local Munich police. I mean, they were more suited to investigating burglaries and stopping bank robberies.
The Germans offered the gunmen money. Several officials, including Dr. Vogel, offered themselves in exchange for the hostages. Both offers were rejected.
Stop the game! Stop the game! Stop the game! Stop the game!
Despite worldwide protests, International Olympic Committee President Avery Brundage did not stop the games until almost 12 hours after the initial attack. Of the Israeli athletes who hadn't been murdered or taken hostage, Esther Rote was the only one still competing. Assuming the games would resume, she was told to prepare for her semifinal race in the 100-meter hurdles.
The doctor gave me 2 pills to sleep. They told me, you must run, because they think we show to all the world it's not break us and we continue.
In the past 5 minutes, 3 helicopters have left the Munich Olympic Park. They're on their way to the Riem Munich Airport in the first helicopter, we understand from a German.
As Esther Rote slept, the hostage drama began tumbling toward its conclusion. Helicopters took the terrorists and Israelis to the airport, where a jet was supposed to fly them to the Middle East. But the Germans planned a rescue. They denied Israel's request that specially trained Israeli commandos carry out the operation. Instead, the Germans deployed 5 snipers to shoot what they thought were 5 terrorists. There were 8. The flawed and chaotic operation went on for more than an hour. Initial reports claimed success, but finally Jim McKay broke the real news to his worldwide television audience.
Our worst fears have been realized tonight. They have now said that there were 11 hostages. 2 were killed in their rooms yesterday morning. 9 were killed at the airport tonight. They're all gone.
September 6th, Beethoven's Egmont Overture filled the Olympic Stadium as a memorial service honored the Israeli victims. Afterwards, Esther Rote and her teammates flew home with their dead comrades, including Esther's beloved track coach, Amitzur Shapira. In Munich, the competition resumed. In the semifinals of the women's 100-meter hurdles, a lane was left empty for Esther Rote. The 1972 Summer Games ended just a day later than originally scheduled, but the Olympics would never be the same.
Munich absolutely changed the world, not only for Olympic security, but for any major spectator event.
Bill Mattman has worked for 2 decades as a security consultant. Munich, he says, sooner or later comes up in security discussions as something to learn from. In Munich, security was a footnote, according to the harshest critics. In the 30 years since the attack, Guarding the games has become a priority.
Go ask EMS when they'll be able to take the next one. Tell them we have a right tibial fracture.
This disaster drill last year at an arena that'll host Olympic hockey games was just part of Utah's security preparation. Even before September 11th, a comprehensive plan was being coordinated in Salt Lake City at the Utah Olympic Public Safety Command. Assistant U.S. Attorney Dave Schwendeman has worked there since it was created in 1998.
This is our command post. As you can see on the east wall, we've got the plasma screens and the monitors. Those are all tuned into our information management and situational awareness system.
The technology and coordination, the more than $300 million budget, and as many as 15,000 people on duty in Utah, this is what Olympic security has become since 1972. And should anyone at command headquarters forget where and when this evolution began, Dave Schwendeman will show them the plaque on the wall with the names of the 11 Israeli dead.
We put it there to remind people that we're here to protect the event, to make sure that the event is safe, and to remind us not necessarily of Munich so much, it's just our general obligation to make sure that we honor their memory by doing this as well as we can.
Munich resonated in ways other than just increased metal detectors and armed guards. People throughout the world, says author Simon Reeve, felt a collective vulnerability brought on really for the first time by the phenomenon of live TV.
Anything between 600 and 900 million people watched this event on television that day. It had a huge effect around the world in much the same way, really, as September the 11th did.
For those close to the drama of 1972, Munich still is an intensely personal event. Esther Rote now is 50, but it's easy for her to imagine herself as that 19-and-a-half-year-old in Munich who could run with the best and who lost a coach she loved like a father.
You cannot believe how much is changed in one day in your life. I cannot believe I come back to Israel without my coach. You see, I almost cry because I remember, and it's come back 30 years later.
Esther Rote's last memory of Amitzur Shapira was the day before the attack, when she set an Israeli record in the 100-meter dash. Shapira told her it was the happiest day of his life. Her time of 11.45 seconds still is the standard in Israel. The record, like her memory, lives on. Tom Goldman, NPR News.